Okay, we're beginning here, six lines down on the top of Yud Daled Amud Aleph. The Gemara is continuing to discuss the fact that no one knew where Moshe Rabbeinu's Kvura was. Not only did no one know, neither did Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Rabbi Chamar Rabbi Chanina Amar, Af Moshe Rabbeinu, and Yodei Hechan Kavur. He didn't know the exact location of his burial plot. Tiv Hacha V'lo Yada Ish Et Kvurato says at the end of the Torah that no one knew the location of his burial. At the beginning of that parsha, it says, "Bezod abracha sheberach Moshe ish helukim." So there it uses the term ish to describe Moshe. And then the parsha, when it says, "Lo yada ish et gvurato," Gemara is now assuming it's the same ish that's mentioned in the beginning of the parsha. And that means that even Moshe Rabbeinu himself did not know the location of his burial place. Amar Rabbi Chama b'Rabbi Chanina mipnei ma nikbar Moshe itzel beit peor. Why was Moshe Rabbeinu buried next to the Avodah Zarah of Beit Peor? Kedei? The chaper al masei peor, in order to atone for the misdeeds of Bnei Israel with regards to the Avodah Zarah peor, when they were there together with the Benot Moav, so that Moshe Rabbeinu's kever will be mechaper on those misdeeds. Tosfot over here brings an interesting midrash that deals with why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu's kvura specifically is associated with that of peor. He says in Midrash Agadah, "B'chol shana v'shana b'eit shechatu Yisrael b'bnot Moav, b'tol perek beit peor ula l'mala k'dei l'katreg." It comes up in order to prosecute or indict Bnei Yisrael, because this was a terrible, deplorable sin that Bnei Yisrael engaged in, and therefore it doesn't just go away after that event, but comes back again and again in order to prosecute ula haskir avon, and to mention this weakness of Bnei Yisrael. Shu'er kibrosh Moshe chozer v'shogea. When it sees the burial place of Moshe, it goes back in and says, can't do anything. Moshe Rabbeinu shak'o b'karkad chotmo, because Moshe Rabbeinu himself pressed it into the ground until its nose. Chusha sholeh chuzer v'nishka l'makom sheshak'o Moshe Rabbeinu. Anytime it rises, it gets pressed back down, like the way that Moshe Rabbeinu did at the time that he wiped out the Avodah Zarah Beit Peor. And that's why we'll see Moshe Rabbeinu was specifically buried here instead of being allowed to go into Eretz Yisrael to provide that protection for Bnei Yisrael. And therefore Moshe is left in a place where he can be in a position to defend Bnei Yisrael like he did his whole lifetime to provide them protection from the prosecution of Baal Peor. Agoda Bach has over here an additional piece to the Gemara that's not found in our Gemara, but it's an interesting continuation. It really deals with this issue of why Moshe Rabbeinu was not allowed to enter into Eretz Yisrael, or at least be buried in Eretz Yisrael like Yaakov and like Yosef. It says, "Umpnei ma nis tatar kivro shel Moshe, meinei basar v'dam." How come the burial place of Moshe Rabbeinu was hidden from anyone? It's not known to anyone. "Yinei shegalui v'yadua l'kodesh boruch hu shatid beit ha-mikdash l'charev l'glot et Yisrael me'artzam." Shem knows that Bnei Yisrael eventually will sin, and the Beit HaMikdash will be destroyed and will be exiled from their land. Shema yavol dekvurato shel Moshe. Maybe they'll stop by the graveside of Moshe Rabbeinu. Boto she'a v'yamdu bebechia. Then they'll cry, v'yitchananu l'Moshe, and they'll beg Moshe to help them out. V'yamru lo Moshe Rabbeinu, amod b'tfila b'adeinu. You should daven on our behalf. V'omid Moshe u'mevatel et gzera. Moshe would have the ability to be mevatel et gzera. This is obviously playing on the imagery of Rachel, who's buried on the way, and Rachel Mevakal Baneha, when they're going into exile. So the same thing would have happened with regards to Moshe Rabbeinu. And because Moshe Rabbeinu holds that magic card where he can dive into Hashem and overturn the Gzerot, it would be so powerful that the Gzerot wouldn't happen. And therefore Hashem made it that there wouldn't be an ability to locate where Moshe Rabbeinu was buried, so that we can't beseech him to intercede on our behalf, because Moshe's intercession is so powerful that it would overturn any gzeirah, and Hashem didn't want that. Interesting from a number of points. One is the idea that knowing where the kvura is or davening by the location of the burial place has significance, which is not so clear both within the halacha as well as within our theology as to why when we daven by places of burial, why does that have any significance? So over here, this continuation of the Gemara does give significance to the fact that one would daven near the kever of Moshe Rabbeinu. In addition, it talks about the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was so powerful that he could overturn any gzeirah, therefore Hashem didn't want that power or that ability left because people would beseech him, And then Hashem would never be able to carry out the punishments or the gzerot that he needs to carry out. Anyway, it's an interesting continuation of the Gemara, both from the perspective as to why Moshe does not go into Eretz Yisrael, because he's protecting Bnei Yisrael, defending Bnei Yisrael by the kitrug of the Peor, as well as the fact that nobody knows where he's buried exactly, because that would give too much power, too much defense to Bnei Yisrael, and therefore he's not known where he's buried, but he is buried in that location, that general location. Now the Gemara continues with one of the most powerful statements of the Gemara, which is, Amar Rabbi Chama Rabbi Chanina, my dichtiv. What is meant by the pasuk, Achrei Hashem Elokeichem Telechu, that one should walk after Hashem? Is it possible for someone to walk after Hashem? Hashem's not a physical being, and being behind or in front, none of that is meaningful in the context of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And what does it mean to walk after Hashem? That Hashem is a consuming fire, so you can't even get close to him, you can't be in his presence. What does it mean to walk after Hashem? The Mishnah and Avot, that's the same thing with regards to Chachamim, and the answer is of a similar nature, which is Elo Aleich Achar Midotav Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that one should emulate the character traits or the characteristics of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mahu Malbish Arumim, just like he dresses those that are unclothed. Hashem made clothing for Adam and Chava in order that they should be covered. So to you should provide clothing, there are those that don't have. Hashem visited the sick. The beginning of Parshat Vayera, after Abraham has the Brit Milah, Hashem is Mevaker Cholim, visits him when he is in that state of sickness. So to you, you should visit the sick. Kodesh Baruch Hu nicheim avilim. Kodesh Baruch Hu comforted those that were bavilut. Vayhi acharei mot Avraham. Vayivarech Elokim et Yitzchak bino. That after the death of Abraham, Hashem comes and gives a bracha to Yitzchak. And as Rashi notes over here, nichamo al aviv u'bercho birkiat avilim. That he came to comfort him over the loss of his father and to give him the bracha that is normally associated with the avilim. Afatea nacheim avilim. So to you, just like Hashem should comfort or console those that are bereaved. Kodesh Baruch Hu kavar mitim. Hashem buried those that passed away. Dichtiv vayikbor oto bagai, that he buried him in the valley. That's referring to Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's why obviously it's connected to our Gemara over here. So to you, afatak vor mitim. So too, you should bury those that pass away. So over here, there is a demand that we emulate the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Examples that are brought over here are all examples of chesed and masim in actions. It's interesting that Rav Soloveitchik in the Divrei HaRav, it's also mentioned in Nefesh HaRav as well. Over here, he notes the fact that in the Gemara in Shabbat, there is a similar Gemara, but the nuances are slightly different. Gemara on Kuf Lamed Gimel Amud Bet over there brings the pasuk, the Tanya, Zeke Livan Veyu, Hitna'e Lefanav B'Mitzvot, which is the famous drasha about Zeke Livan Veyu, that one must be mitna'eh lefanav b'mitzvot, to adorn or decorate oneself with mitzvot, and that is the source for hidur mitzvah. But then after that it says, abash sha'ulomer v'anveyu, what is v'anveyu, who, what is anveyu like? So it's similar to what we say on Noshanot, on Sukkot, which is anveyu zani v'hu, he and I, hevi domelo, you should be similar to him. Mahu chanun v'rachum? Af atai eye chanun v'rachum. Just like he is merciful and passionate, you too should emulate those attributes of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And the Rav points out over here that there's both a difference in the pasuk that is used for the source, as well as what's learned out, even though both of them in the end are saying that we should emulate a Kodesh Baruch Hu imitatio dei, we should act like God. But there's a difference here, and he says, that main focus in the Gemara here is Acharei Hashem Elokeichem Telechu, which is that you should walk after God, meaning that you should act like Him, you should do like Him. Lasot pe'ula, kamo she'Kadosh Baruch Hu oseh. Chaim v'Gemara in Shabbat, alashon acherti, mahu rachum v'chanun, demashma she'ikar adgasha hi al hamida atzma. That the character trait itself is what you're supposed to emulate of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shuit barach bal chesed. Just like God is a generous and compassionate God, so too you should be compassionate and generous just like those are descriptions, names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and a part and parcel of his essence, so too, we have to make them a part and parcel of our essence. So whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, or what's the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we also have to make that our essence. It's not only replicating or emulating Hashem in terms of actions that we do, but our whole persona has to be converted into, be the same or similar to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. And just like he is a Rachum v'Chanun and a Baal Chesed, so too we have to be a Rachum v'Chanun Baal Chesed, not just in our activities, but in who we are and what's the makeup of who we are. And here he mentions it in the Mishnah Navot with regards to Al Avodah that refers to Tefillah, that Tefillah is not just simply a fulfillment of the Pasuk of Do B'chol Avchem, that one has to worship Hashem through their heart, which is Tefillah, but just like a Kodesh Baruch Hu Davins, which the Gemara in Brachot proves, so too, we should daven. And just like tefillah is one of the midot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tefillah has to be one of our midot and has to be a part of our essence, tefillah. So there, the difference between the two sources, the Rav Soloveitchik sees as demanding both aspects from us, both the active form that we must emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but also in our essence, we must be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that our activities should also impact on who we are as people and influence our essence. Now, the Gemara then moves over to discuss katnut or, we mentioned before that HaKadosh Baruch Hu clothed Adam and Chava, Rav Shmuel Chalamar, Davar Haba Mina Or, something that comes from the skin, which Rashi interprets as being wool, Tzemer, Chalamar Davar She'or Nehenemenu, and the other one emphasizes something that the body or the skin gets pleasure from. And Rashi says that's Pishtan, which someone, linen that someone wears directly on the body. So the argument here is that whether it was Tzemer Upishtim, and in Breishit Rabbah and the Midrash, there are plenty of other opinions, but here Rav and Shmuel argue about Tzemer Upishtim, which are viewed as the two major or prominent materials that are used in clothing. And we know that in other places, the Gemara Darshans that Beged in the Torah only mean Tzemer Upishtim, and that also the Votaseh of Kilayim involves not mixing Tzemer and Pishtim together. And another aspect here is the fact that Adam HaRishon was not given permission to utilize animals. So we can't be talking about or in the sense of a skin here, or in terms of leather, because he wasn't allowed to use the animals in this way. Others argue and say if the animal died on its own, then he could use it. He just couldn't kill the animals for that. But that might have been what drove Rashi to say over here that the or is not literally skins or leather, but rather tzemer or wool. I think he might be more drawn by the fact that in the Torah, tzemer and fishtim are the primary materials of clothing. And the argument of Rav and Shmuel here about the katnut or might also be reflective of their understanding of what the primary purpose of the clothing is for. Is the primary purpose of the clothing simply to cover the erva of the man and the woman, and that's what Hashem provided them clothing for? Or is the clothing there for the pleasure or the benefit of the individual that they gain, or how they feel and how they utilize that clothing? And so is the focus on the just simple protective side of it, or the covering side of it? Or is it on the benefit or pleasure side of it? And that might be the argument as to whether it was tzemer or pishtim. Darash Rav Simlai, Torah, tchilata gmilut chasadim, v'sofa gmilut chasadim. The Torah opens with gmilut chesed, and it closes with gmilut chesed. And that is, dechti v'yas Hashem l'kim l'adam l'ishto kotnot or v'yavishem. In the beginning of the Torah, Hashem provides clothing for Adam v'chava, v'sofa gmilut chasadim. And in the end of the Torah, it's gmilut chasadim, dechti that he buried him in the valley. Darash Rav Simlai, mipnei ma nitave Moshe Rabbeinu nikanes l'Eretz Yisrael? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu want to enter into Eretz Yisrael? Chilechol mipriyahu tzarich, o lisboa mituvahu tzarich? Does he need to eat from its fruits, or to enjoy and be satisfied from its goodness? And interesting that this is a terminology that we use in Alamechia, which is lechol mipriyahu lisboa mituvah, which is actually our description of Eretz Yisrael, and how we, in our accolades towards the land of Israel and its produce, that we say these exact words of Lechol Mipriyav Nizba Mituva. Kach Amar Moshe, Harbe Mitzvot Nitzdavu Yisrael, Ve'inu Nidkayim Ela Be'Eretz Yisrael. We have so many mitzvot that are tuliot ba'aretz, and I can't do them in Chutzaretz. I want to go into Eretz Yisrael so that I can perform the mitzvot, and Kaneis Ani La'aretz Kedei Shitkayimu Kulan Ayadi, so that I can go and perform all of these mitzvot. In the end, the only reason you want to do the mitzvot is because then you'll be rewarded for them. I'm going to credit you as if you did them, and therefore you don't have to actually go in and perform the mitzvot. Because then it says in the pasuk at the end of Perek Nun Gimel in Yeshayahu, Lachein Achalek Lo Birabim, then I will distribute to him publicly, V'etatsumim Yechalek Shalal, and the great ones will divide the booty, Tachad Asher He'era L'mavet Nafsho, in lieu of the fact that he was willing to pour out his nefesh, V'et Poshim Nimna, and he was accounted amongst those that were sinners, V'uchet Rabim Nasa, he carried the burden of the iniquities of the public, and for those that have sinned, he intercedes or davens on their behalf. So here this is a description of Moshe Rabbeinu as the Gemara is about to say, but the Gemara is suggesting over here that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael, and because he wanted the school to be Mikayim, the mitzvah that's Tluyot Baretz. Again, always when we get to see Gemaras like this, we get the opportunity to appreciate how much or how wonderful it is that we do have the chance to be in Eretz Yisrael, and we do have the chance to perform these mitzvot at Tluyot Baretz, something that Moshe was nitaveh, so much desire to do and go into Eretz Yisrael, just to do these mitzvot at Tluyot Baretz, and Ashrei Shezachinu, that we have this opportunity. As the Marsha points out over here, even though the Mishnah in Avot says that a person should do mitzvot, shelo amanat lekabel schar, not in order to receive the reward for the mitzvot, nevertheless, if a person extends themselves and wants to do a mitzvah, which they're not otherwise obligated in, then that is something where they can ask for schar, or they can look for schar because they extend themselves beyond what their core obligations were. Or you can say a person like Moshe Rabbeinu, who was shalem and was able to, of his own, collect on the schar of the mitzvot, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that Moshe's accomplishment of those mitzvot would only add up to the positive points that he was carrying, and therefore it would result in schar, even though that may not be his primary motivation. And Hashem says, if that's the case, then let me credit you with that schar. And so now the Gemara this darshan's the pasuk, which is, V'chein achalek lo berabim, I will distribute to him in public, yachol ka'achronim v'lo ka'rishonim. You would think like the latter and not the earlier, the achronim being those that rely on our forefathers and those that are earlier for their merits, rather than the Rishonim who can stand on their own, meaning the Avot, who, by which we are connecting ourselves and beseech HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help us because of the Avot and because of the great leaders. Tamalomar v'etatsumim yechalek shalal, that he will divide the spoils like the great ones, ki Abraham, Yitzchak v'Yaakov, shem atsumim b'Torah v'mitzvot, who were mighty ones in the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu will be able to enjoy the schar and the reward of his own merits and his own actions, and he won't have to rely on others for that. Tachat asher hera the mavet nafsho, shemasar etzmo demita, because he was willing to sacrifice his life or give up his life on behalf of Bnei Israel, shenemar, v'imayin mecheni na misifrecha, by the ego, he says to Hashem, if you're not going to forgive the people for the sin of the ego, then I want to be wiped out from the Torah. Ved poshim nimna, and then he was counted amongst those that sinned, shimnai meitei midbar, because he's now amongst those that die in the midbar and don't make it into Eretz Yisrael. Uchet rabim nasa, that he carried the iniquity of the public, shekiper maser egel, because he was able to bring atonement for the egel. Uluposhim yavgia, shebikesh rachamim al poshe Yisrael, that he beseeched Hashem to help the poshe Yisrael, those that are sinners, shiachzeru b'tshuva, that they should return to Hashem b'tshuva. Ben pgia ela tfila, we know that the word pgia means tefillah. The Gemara in other places uses this with regards to Yaakov, which is vayifka b'makom, that he reached that place. And the Gemara there says, ein pgia ela tefillah. And that's how we know that Yaakov Avinu instituted Ma'ariv or Tefillat Ma'ariv. Shnemar, v'ata al tidpalei v'ayana me'ezeh. And Hashem says to Yirmiyahu, I don't want you davening or praying on behalf of this nation anymore. V'al tisa b'adam rina u'tefillah. And you should not take up a song or a prayer on their behalf. V'altiv gabi. And don't pressure me, don't push me. But you see, in this context, altiv gabi means don't bother me. And as we know by Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem makes the same statement to Moshe Rabbeinu, which is, Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, leave me alone so that I can destroy the nation. He opens up a petach for Moshe Rabbeinu to say, if I don't leave you alone, then he won't destroy the nation. And over here by Yirmiyahu, he's saying the same thing. Don't bother him or don't daven to save this nation because I don't want to hear about it. I don't want them to be saved. They're deserving of the punishment. But that does open up this petach of pgia, this ability of these great tzaddikim to daven or to pray on behalf of Bnei Israel, to be melamed zchut on Bnei Israel and to defend them from these terrible gzerot. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu not only helps and gain forgiveness for Bnei Yisrael, but he also helps those that are off the derech to, he davens on their behalf that they should return to the derech and that they should follow in the ways of Hashem. With that, then we complete the first perek. Hadron Alach, HaMekenel Ishto. Now the Mishnayot move on to the process or procedures of the Sota. The Mishnah already began with the fact that she was brought up to the Sha'ar Nikanor and that they used to walk her up and down. Now it says here, Hayami Viet Minchata, Betoch Kfifa Mitzrit. They used to bring her flower offering inside of a Kfifa Mitzrit. Could be either an Egyptian basket, or as Rashi here translates Mitzrit, similar to the Chevela Mitzrit that was mentioned before, the rope that held up her clothing after it was torn or tattered. Over here, Rashi translates Mitzrit as Shalsh and Itzarei Dekel, again from the bark of the palm tree. So the Dim Shigdelim Saviva Dekel. But once again, based on the Tosafot over there in Yushalmi, we know that Mitzrit is also a double entendre here, which is that it also means Mitzrayim, because the Masse Mitzrayim is what's described in Parshat Arayot as being the type of behavior Hashem does not want you to engage in. And therefore, it's here, the Kfifa Mitzrit, which is this lowly basket, and also reminds us of Mitzrayim, is indicative of the behavior of this woman who acted like those people of Mitzrayim, and in such a lowly manner. And we put in her hands in order to tire her out. And as the Tosfot Shantz points out over here, it's not for the wave offering that she has to do, because that comes in much later. So we put it in her hands to hold right now, because we want her to wear her down. This is all part of this procedure where we're trying to wear her down, that if she is guilty, that she will admit it, and we will not have to go through with, first of all, erasing the Shem Hashem, as well as having her drink the Mehamarim. Rashi notes over here, Hayamevit Minchata, is that the woman herself does not bring the Mincha, but rather Habal. That the husband brings the Korban Mincha, because it says in the Pasuk, Ve'vit Korbana Aleha, that she brings the Korban with her, but it's the husband who provides the Korban, because he's the one making the accusation, and he's the one who wants the Beirur, the clarification through this process, and therefore he's the one who brings the Mincha, then she will be then engaged with and put on Mizbeach. Kol HaMinachot Chilatan V'Sufan B'Kli Sharet. All menachot that come to the Mikdash start out in a klisharet and end up in a klisharet. Bezul, on the other hand, this, tchilata b'kfifa mitzrit, starts out in this lowly basket, sofa b'klisharet, but then ends up in a klisharet. Kol menachot tu'unot shemen milivona, all the other menachot in the Mikdash require oil and frankincense. Bezul, eino tu'una, lo shemen v'lo livona. This does not require either of those, or you're not allowed to put either of them on there, because it's a minchat choteh, and therefore it's going to be yavesh, it's going to be dry, because it's indicative of the fact that this is not something that's nice or fancy. This is being brought because of the deplorable behavior of this woman. Kol ha-menachot ba'ot minachitim. All other menachot come from wheat. Zo ba'am minaseorim. And this comes from barley. So there are here nuances or differences between the minchat kina'ot, which is the minchat ha-sota, and other normal menachot. One of the key differences is other menachot come from wheat, whereas this comes from barley. The Gemara is going to say there's one exception to that, and that is Minchat Omer. And the same thing is true of Shemen Livona, that all their Menachot come with oil and frankincense. This does not come with frankincense. The Gemara will also point out the fact that a Minchat Choteh, which is part of the Korbanei Oleh V'Yoreid, also comes without Shemen and Livona, for a similar reason, which is that it's a Korban Chatat, rather than a Korban Nidava, that is normally the way that a Mincha is brought. Minchat Omer afal pi sheba min seorim. Well, despite the fact that Minchat Omer also comes from barley, it is different than this. Hi hayta ba geres. It came from the choicest of the barley. It was actually roasted and then milled over a number of 13 times until you got a very, very fine flour from the barley, which was very similar to a wheat flour. Bazo ba kemach. On the other hand, this comes as whole barley. Similar to whole wheat, this was whole barley. And therefore, it was very unpleasant. It was like a horse cake. Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Kashem Shema'aseh Maseh Be'ema. As Rabbi Gamliel notes, that Kashem Shema'aseh Maseh Be'ema, Kach Kurbana Machel Be'ema. Just like her actions or activities were like that of an animal, where they are not monogamous, and they do not necessarily stay with their mate, Kach Kurbana Machel Be'ema. So too, her Kurban is reflective of that behavior that she possibly was not monogamous in her relationship. Tosfot over here asks about the Mishnah, but the Mishnah seems to give an order to the procedures of the Sota that do not match what's written in the Parsha of the Sota. Tosfot goes through that in some detail as to what's the order based on the Parsha versus what's the order that is based on a Mishnah. And Tosfot ends off saying that he's not sure which one is the proper procedure. Are we to take the Mishnah literally, and the Parsha has to be reinterpreted in the light of the Mishnah, or is it the other way around, that the Torah's procedure is considered to be the one that is proper, and the Mishnah is just laying it out based on other factors, including convenience and what's topically connected, but the order is that which is said in the Torah. Tosfot over here says, "Lo yadanu lama shina atana seder v'ima seder atana dafko seder ha parsha dafko." He doesn't know. But if you look in the Tosfot on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Bet, Tosfot Kodem, over there, Tosfot writes much more strongly that he's concluding that that parsha of the Torah is the correct order, and he writes, "Va seder sota ena nishnet al seder sharei ein seder mishnah v'seder parsha mekuvanim." They're not equal. Kamoshi parashnu barosha perek, as I said already earlier in the perek, v'seder parsha ikar. But the parsha is the primary indication of what the order should be. Seder mishnah afilu the mitzvah ba'almalo. But keeping the order of the mishnah is not even a mitzvah, not even a chatchila. The real order is the order of the parsha, and therefore all that's written in the mishnah is just a way of teaching the material, but not necessarily giving you the order of how things transpired. Whereas Tosfot by us seems to not be sure which is the proper order. Tosfot writing by Yudzayin Mubet there says that he thinks that the parsha is the proper order. Tanya, Abba Chanin Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Kedei Liyaga. The reason that they put the mincha in her hand is to wear her down. Kedei Shetachzorba, in order that she should relent on her saying that she is innocent here. Im Kacha Chasat Torah Lovrei Ritzono, Kal V'Chomer Osei Ritzono. Here, this is someone who is suspected of doing something wrong. In the end, we're trying to convince her, if she did something wrong, to admit it so that she doesn't have to drink the water and then be punished with the terrible punishments of drinking the water. Here, the Torah has mercy on this individual, and certainly people who do what Hashem asks and act properly, that the Torah and Hashem will have mercy upon them. Tosfot also mentions over here something that we saw earlier, which is when we say Darshin and Taima Dekra, over here the Gemara seems to indicate that there's a reason behind the Pasuk. How come we don't say this is a P. Rabbi Shimon who's Doresh Taima Dekra? Tosfot makes a distinction that he mentioned earlier on, which is that Taima Dekra is only when there's a nafkamina from that time. To give reasons behind the Pasuk, that's not only Rabbi Shimon, that's anybody would give reasons for why the halacha is in this manner or should be this way. What Rabbi Shimon is mechadesh is that once we give a reason, based on that reason, we can now change the halachic ramifications of this mitzvah, meaning that we can apply it only to, in the case of the mashkon, only to an aniyah, not to an ashira. That's where we say Darshin and Taimed Akra is only the sheet of Rabbi Shimon. But what over here, where we're giving a reason behind the Pasuk, that is not unique to Rabbi Shimon Shita, that is something that everybody does, and both the Rambam and the Ramban are of that similar thought process, and that's why they all give, or try to give reasons for the mitzvot. How do we know that the reasoning here is that the Torah wants to spare her life, and it's not for another reason, which is, maybe the whole reason here is that we don't want the name of Hashem to be erased. In order to protect against that erasure, we would rather pressure her to admit then have the Shem Hashem erased. So that is the consideration here, not her saving her life or protecting her, but rather the main consideration is that we don't want the Shem Hashem to be erased. It says, Kasavar, he holds Mashke, v'achar kach machrivet minchata, that he's of the opinion that first she drinks, and then afterwards makrivet minchata, and then she brings her mincha. So first of all, as Rashi points out here, miyukolz manchelo karva minchata eno nivdeket, that the mesota, even though she's already drank them, it will not go into effect. It will not be effective until she actually brings her mincha, until she finishes the procedure of the sota. So the mayim or the mesota are in abeyance until she takes care of the mincha that needs to be brought over here. And so here we're still putting pressure on her, according to this opinion, even after the shame has been erased and she already drank the potion that included the erasure of the name of Hashem. So that's not a consideration anymore. Yet, the only consideration is why to wear her down and have her admit over here is because of the fact that we don't want her to lose her life. And therefore it shows you here that the Torah is chassa on the life of this Overet Aveira. The Gemara says, "Ve'i mishum megillah," because if the issue was erasure of the Shem Hashem from the parchment, "Haim chikala," it was already erased. Now Tosfot over here raises the issue that we said earlier in the Masechta, that we go through different stages. In the earlier stages, we try to convince her not to go through with this in order to stop her from entering into a position where we're going to have to erase the Shem Hashem. But at the point, once we pass that threshold by which we've already erased the Shem Hashem and we've made them into the Mesulta, then we pressure the other way, which is that we put pressure on her to drink it because we want her to go through with it and prove her innocence, and we don't want her to back out now because she's afraid of the Mesulta. So Tosfot says over here, that doesn't sound like that's the case. Here it sounds like we continue to pressure not to drink even after the erasure of the name. Venira, on the Meimar, it must be that Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is not like we said in the earlier perek, that we pressure her to drink even after the erasure of the Shem Hashem. Obviously, he disagrees with that difference or that threshold that we spoke about in the earlier perek. And therefore, Tosfot concludes that whoever has that opinion in the earlier part of the Masechta that believes that we do put pressure on her to drink after already the name of Hashem has been erased, means that they believe the mincha is brought before the erasure of the name of Hashem. And therefore, the only consideration here is whether she's going to drink or not. And that's why we use the mincha earlier to pressure her not to drink, because the mincha came before the erasure of the Shem Hashem. And so we're wearing her down at that point in order to dissuade her. But once we've erased the Shem Hashem, according to that opinion, there's no longer a reason to stop her from drinking. We're actually the opposite. We're going to encourage her to drink. Okay, now the Gemara continues. Kol ha-minachot. Here it's comparing it to all other minachot. Veriminu. Seder ha-mincha ketzat. Here is the normal process for a flower offering that's brought in the Mikdash. Adam mivi mincha mitoch beito. Beklatot shel kesef. A person brings from his house inside of utensils of silver, v'shel zahav, of gold. Then he puts it into one of the utensils of the Mikdash that were kadosh, umikadsha beklisharet. And that is how he then makes it kadosh. We've already discussed earlier the difference between the fact that it's already kadosh when you're bringing it because you were mikadesh the flower to bring it as a mincha. So what's the difference between that and when it's placed into klisharet that becomes kadosh? The answer is that originally it was only shadamim. It was for its monetary value. And therefore, if something goes wrong with it, you can redeem it and use that to purchase other items that are for Kedusha. On the other hand, once it already enters into or is placed now in the Klisharet, it contains Kedusha Taguf. And therefore, if something goes wrong with it now, it's Pasul, and it has to be burnt, and you can no longer redeem it. And therefore, now it will be Nifsal, be Tvulyom, Belina, and it doesn't have any more redemption. Noten alei hashmana ulevonta. Then you put the oil onto that flower as well as the frankincense. Umalicha itzal kohen. And then you give it over to the kohen. The kohen molicha etzel mizbeach, and the kohen then takes it to the mizbeach umegisha bekeren dromit maravit, and then he touches this kli sharet to the southwestern corner of the mizbeach keneged chudash shel keren at the point or the tip of the corner v'dayo, and that's sufficient. Umisalek et levona letzad echad. Then he moves the frankincense all to one side v'komets mimakom shnit rabash mana, and then he takes out a handful from the place where there's a lot of oil. The oil's been mixed in well with the flour. And then he puts it into a second klisharet, this kometz that the kohen took out in his hand. Then he collects all the frankincense that's on top. And he places that together with the kometz in this klisharet. And then he takes it up to the mizbeach. And then he places it in the klisharet on the mizbeach. He salts it. But no, Gabi Ayishim, and then he puts it onto the fire. Kareva Kometz. Once the Kometz ends up on the Mizbeach, Shiarei Ne'achalim. Then the remaining parts of the Mincha are given to the Kohanim, and they're Kodshei Kodashim that are eaten by the Kohanim, Zicharim, inside of the Azara. Rashaim Kohanim Liten L'Tocha Yain V'Shemen U'Dvash. The Kohanim who eat the leftovers of the Mincha can mix that together with wine, oil, and honey. The only thing they cannot do is make it into chametz, which the Gemara will learn from Pasuk later on. But even though yayin and dvash cannot be brought as part of a mincha, dvash is restricted from being placed in any mincha. Nevertheless, for the Kohanim who are eating it, they are permitted to do it as they please. And again, we'll see the source for that in the Psukim. But they may not make it into chametz. And as we've mentioned before, the process of the mincha parallels that of a zebach. And so, just like by a zevach, the stages are that you have shchitat zevach, and then you have kabbalat adam. And after kabbalat adam, you have holachat adam on the mizbeach, and then you have zrikat adam on the mizbeach. So too, those four avodot are paralleled with regards to the mincha. And that is that you have the separation of the kometz from the mincha, which is equivalent to the shchita of the behemah. Then you place the kometz into a kli sharet, which is the equivalent of the kabbalat dam by the behema. Then you're molich the kli sharet with the kometz and levona to mizbeach, which is the equivalent of the holacha of the dam. And as you get a dam and mizbeach, and here it is the holacha of the kometz to the mizbeach and the haktara of the kometz on the mizbeach. So there are very close parallels between that which happens by a mincha and that which happens by a zevach. And therefore, their dinim are going to be the same as we see over here. Ktanimia, klatot shel kesef, uklatot shel zahav. That normally people bring them in these silver and golden utensils. Amra papa, ema bikilim aruim likli sharet. So our Mishnah said that all menachot start out in a kli sharet and end up in a kli sharet. But here, they're bringing them from their homes in these golden and silver utensils. They're not inside of a kli sharet. So that indicates that you don't have to start with a kli sharet. Rav Papa says, you know what? The Mishnah didn't mean literally you have to be in a kli sharet. You have to be inside of something that is ra'oi, something that could be a kli sharet. It's made out of materials, metallic materials, which can become a kli sharet. Michlal, from that you would infer the kfifa mitzrit lo chazia. That means that a kfifa mitzrit would not qualify to be a kli sharet, and that's what the Mishnah means. That the mincha v'sota does not come in a kli sharet. Doesn't mean it doesn't come in a kli sharet. It comes in something that would not be ra'oi, proper to be a kli sharet. As opposed to other menachot that come in silver and gold that are items or utensils that could be made into kli sharet. Come on. Who is this like? Deloka Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. This is against the position of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya. Kli sharet shasan shel eitz. Utensils of the mikdash. If they're made out of wood, Rabbi Posel. Rabbi says that you can't use them. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Machshir says that they are fine to use as kli sharet. Gemara seems to indicate here that kfifa mitzrit would be no different than a wooden utensil. And just like by a wooden utensil, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda say that it is mutar, or it's okay to use the kli sharet, so too by the kfifa mitzrit. And therefore, this explanation would not accord with that position of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. When it says, afilu teima Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, it could even be according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, ema dama Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda bichashuvim. That's only when you use a significant material like wood. He agrees there that that has a din of kli sharet, that we use the kli sharet. Bipchutim yamar. By things that are lowly materials like a kfifa mitzrit, who says over there that he would agree that you can make that into a kli sharet? V'chi leitlei. Does he not have the principle that is laid out by the pasuk, the Rabbi Yossi Reyudo? Hakriveo na, the pechatecha, ayirtzecha, uisapanecha? It's a rhetorical question. If you bring the lowliest, the worst of your possessions to Hashem, you think Hashem's gonna want that? You think Hashem's gonna favor you because of what you have brought? So obviously we don't bring the lowest or the worst of your materials to Hashem. And so he believes that wooden utensils could be kli sharet, but that would not be true with regards to kfifa mitzrit because it's something that is beneath the dignity of what someone would bring to the mikdash and would be inappropriate. It would be in violation of this pasuk of akriviyehu na the pechatecha. So now the Gemara continues to darsh in the braita that we brought before and it says, no, now a kli sharet, mekadsha b'kli sharet. Puts it into a kli sharet, and then they are mikadesh. They sanctify it in the kli sharet. Shmat mina, from this you will conclude, kli sharet ein mikadshim ela midat. This is a machloket that is found in the Gemara in a number of places as to whether when an item goes into a kli sharet, is it automatically kadosh, or do you have to actively mikadesh it when you put it into the kli sharet? You need dat. You need intent for that. So here, from the break that we brought, it sounds like no, now the kli sharet umikadsha. In the active form of the verb, that you actually have to be mikadesh it, actively sanctify it in order for it to work. So Gemara says, Ema, you could amend the bright to read notna b'kli sharet, likadesha b'kli sharet. Not that you are mikadesha, that you actively are mikadesh it, but you put in the kli sharet because likadesha, it becomes kadosh when it is in the kli sharet. If you amend the bright to read that way, then it would mean that even the passive form, the kli sharet, would be mikadesh it. You don't have a proof, because you could read the Braita either as being Mikadsha, or you could amend it to read Vikodesha, and then either of those explanations then would accord with the two opinions, and we don't have any proof to whether Kli Sharet are Mikadshim Midat or Afilu Shalom Midat. Then it says, Noten Ale Shmana Uvanta. It says, then you place the Shemen and the frankincense on it, Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, Vayatzak Ale Shemen V'natan Ale Levona, that you will then pour the oil onto it and put the frankincense. Umolicha itzel haKohen, and then you bring it to the Kohen, because it says, Dichtiv Yivya el Bnei Aron. Then you bring it to Bnei Aron. This is when the Kohenim have to enter into the process of the Mincha. For this point, it can be done with the Yisrael. At this point, the Kohen has to take over. The Kohen molicha itzel haMizbeach. The Kohen takes it to Mizbeach. Dichtiv, Bigisha itzel haMizbeach. That he brings it to the Mizbeach. Begisha beKeren Dromit Marvit, he touches it to the southwestern side, Keneged Chudash Shel Keren, by the point of the, or the edge of the corner, V'dayon, that's sufficient. Now the Gemara wants to understand it. Milolon, how do you know that you bring it to the southwestern corner? Dichtiv, because it says, V'zot Torata Mincha, HaKrevo Ta B'nei Aron Lifnei Hashem El P'nei HaMizbeach. This is the process of the Mincha, that B'nei Aron will bring it, Lifnei Hashem, before Hashem, El P'nei HaMizbeach, to the face of the Mizbeach. V'tanya, Lifnei Hashem Yachol B'Ma'araf. You would think Lifnei Hashem means on the western side, because the Kodesh HaKodeshim, the Hichal, are all on the western side. But the pasuk says you have to do it to the face of the mizbeach. You would think if it has to be on the face of the mizbeach, it has to be on the southern side, because the southern side of mizbeach is the face of the mizbeach, because the ramp is found on the southern side of mizbeach. The Tosfot Shans over here also notes the other drasha, which is that by tzafon, by the north, it says ayerach mizbeach tzafona, that it says the end or the edge of the mizbeach that's on the northern side, implying that the face or the upper part is on the southern side. So for either of those reasons, that's why the southern side is called the Pnei HaMizbeach. So that you can only accomplish if you're on the southern side. Tamalom alifnei Hashem. But if you're on the southern side, then you're not in front of Hashem. HaKeitzad. So what do you do to accomplish both being lifnei Hashem and Pnei HaMizbeach? Begisha bekeren dronit maravit. Then you bring it to the southwestern corner. Keneged chudash shel keren, right at the edge or the point of the corner. V'dayon, that's enough. As Rashi explains, that the opinion of this Tano in the Braita is that the Mizbeach was centered in the Azara, as well as the fact that the Kodesh HaKodeshim and Eichal were centered in the Mikdash. And therefore the width of the Mizbeach, which is 32 Amot, is connected to 32 Amot of the Eichal. The Eichal was 20 Amot wide, plus there were 6 Amot of the thickness of the walls on each side. So that made it that it had a width of 32 Amot, which was lined up exactly on the western side of the Mizbeach. Therefore, if you touch the southwestern corner of Mizbeach, you catch the southern side, which is the face of Mizbeach, but you're also on the edge of the western side, which that western side is the most southern edge of the Heichal. Again, the width of the 20 Amot plus the 6 Amot of the thickness of the wall, you'll be at the end of that 6 Amot, and that will put you Lifnei Hashem. And so there you accomplish being both Al Pnei Mizbeach and Lifnei Hashem. On the other hand, we have an alternate opinion, which is Rabbi Elazar Omer, you would think you're bringing it on the western side, or you bring it on the southern side of the Keren. Any place you find two psukim. One way that you explain the pasuk will accomplish both the meaning of that pasuk as well as the remainder of the pasuk or another pasuk. And another interpretation will accomplish what's meant here, but will not fulfill the needs of the other pasuk, the remainder of the pasuk. Minichimich mekayim etzmo v'tel chaviro. Then we will discard the explanation that only suffices or is successful at explaining one part or one pasuk. V'tofsimich mekayim etzmo mekayim chaviro. And we'll take up the explanation of the pasuk that allows us to explain this pasuk and the other pasuk or the other part of the pasuk. Shetalmer lifnei Hashem b'ma'araf. If you do it lifnei Hashem on the western side, bitalta el pnei mizbeach v'daron. Then you do not accomplish the fact that you are on Pnei HaMizbeach, which is on the southern side. On the other hand, if you go to the southern side, you also accomplish the Lifnei Hashem to the western side. How do you do this? You go to the southwestern corner and you put it on the southern side of that Keren. How are you mikayim it? We just explained that the Mizbeach is centered on the Azara. It's 32 Amot wide. And if it's 32 Amot wide, then it intersects the Heichal right at the end of the Heichal. You have the 20 Amot wide of the Heichal plus the 6 Amot thickness of the wall. That means at the end of the Mizbeach, that corner is also the end of the Heichal. If you're on the southern side, like Rabbi Elazar is suggesting, you're already past the Heichal and you're no longer Lifnei Hashem. So Amar Vashi, Kasar Haitana, Kuli Mizbeach v'Tzafon Kai. This is the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, that the Mizbeach was entirely on the northern side of the Azara. And therefore, by being skewed to the northern side of the Azara, that makes it that the southern side of the Mizbeach is actually on the center line of the Azara. And being on the center line of the Azara, if you're on the southern side, you're also facing Lifnei Hashem. You're also facing in towards the Heichal, because the Mizbeach ends at halfway through the doorways or the width of the Heichal. So therefore, if you're on the southern side, you also accomplish being Lifnei Hashem, or facing in towards the Eichal. Now, even though technically you could have explained Rabbi Elazar's opinion, not that to Kule Mizbeach B'Tzafon, the entire Mizbeach was on the northern side, even if it was skewed a little bit to the northern side, you could still accomplish what Rabbi Elazar says over here, because as long as it's skewed a little bit to the north, then when you're on the southern side, you're still lined up with Heichal towards the west. If that's the case, why does Rashi conclude over here that it's Kulei B'Tzafon? So Rashi says that's because there's a three-way machloket in the Gemara in Zvachim as to the placement of the Mizbeach. There is the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, who says that it was Mimutzai, was down in the middle, was centered in the Azara. You have the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who says that the entire Mizbeach was on the southern side. And then you have the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that the entire Mizbeach was on the northern side. So here, Ravashi, instead of creating a fourth opinion, which would then indicate that there's another opinion that says it was skewed to the north, but not entirely in the north, he'd rather subsume Rabbi Elazar's opinion under that sheet of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, rather than creating a fourth machloket in this position. Despite that fact, many of the Rishonim find that there are alternate opinions based on the Mishnayot and Midot, as well as other opinions which come out that the Mizbeach could have been centered, could have been all in the north, all in the south, rove in the south, or rove in the north, and we actually do have a spectrum of opinions with regard to this. But Ravashi then just picks up the opinion which is simple, where if it's Kulei B'Tzafon, for sure, if you're on the southern side, then you're in front of the Heichal without any questions. Ma'ivid Dayo. What does it mean that's enough that you just touch the Kli Sharei with the Mincha in it to the southwestern corner? I'm Rav Ashi Itzrich. Sagadat Chamina Tibaya Gashat Mincha Gufa. Maybe you have to actually attach the Mincha itself to the corner of Mizbeach. Kamash Malan, that it's sufficient that you touch the Kli Sharei that is holding the Mincha in it to the corner. Ve'mahokanami. How do you know that's not the case? Why do you assume that you will just use the Kli Sharei? You don't have to touch the whole Mincha there. I'm Akra, because the pasuk says, V'kreiva el HaKohen. Because you give it to the Kohen, and then he takes it to Mizbeach. Just like when you give it to the Kohen, you give it to him inside of a Kli Sharet. So too, the touching of the Mincha to the Mizbeach is also done inside of a utensil. And that's how we know that it suffices in Tzdayo to touch the Kli to the corner of the Mizbeach. Then, the next part of the process is, you move all the frankincense to one side. Because then when the Kohen goes to take the fistful of the komets of the flour and oil out of the mincha, he doesn't capture any frankincense in that. Kedetnan, because that Mishnah Menachot says, kamatz valab yado tzvor. He takes out a komets, and it's not only oil and flour, but there's a little pebble in there, or gargar melach, or there's a little grain of salt, okoret levona, or there's a small granule of frankincense in there, pasul, then it's no good. So we have to ensure that it's just pure shemen and flour, and doesn't have any levona in it. The komets me'makom shnit rabbe shamna, and he takes off the komets from the place where there's a lot of oil, where the oil has been mixed in well. Minalon, how do we know that's the case? Yichtiv misalta o mishamna, migirsa o mishamna. So it says to take from the solot and the oil, and migirsa o mishamna. So every time it mentions it, it also mentions it together with the shemen, indicating that when you take off the komets, it should be in a place where there is shemen. And then it says, once again, once you've taken the komets off, you have to put into a kli sharet again. And how do you know that? Why do I have to do this again? It was already mikudash the first time when you put it into the kli sharet. So why now again do you have to be mikadesh it a second time in a kli sharet by placing the komets into a kli sharet? Where it says, because of what we mentioned before, that the avudot of the mincha parallel that of the zebach, and therefore mida hava adam, it's similar to the blood. Even though the dam became kadosh with the knife that shechted the animal, adar makdish le b'klei sharet. He goes again and he's makdish it again by collecting it or doing kabbalat adam into a klei sharet. So to over here, just like the hafrashat komets from the mincha is equivalent to the shechita of the behema, so too, the placement of the dam or the kabbalat adam into a klei sharet, so too the komets needs to be placed into a klei sharet. Now this actually brings up a very interesting issue, which is not discussed here, but there's a very, very large Tosafot that discusses it in the beginning of Ezum and Koman in the Zvachim, with regards to whether the knife that is used to shecht the animal has to be a klei sharet. Because over here, it makes it sound like that the shechita of the animal is mikadesh the animal, and that means that the knife that's being used must be a klei sharet. So it's interesting from a number of perspectives. Number one is that shechita is allowed to be done by a zar, and not only by a kohen. That's number one. Number two is, there is a machloket as to whether you can use a wooden knife to shech the animal. Is that subject to the machloket that we had here in our Gemara between Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, whether they're machshir, klei sharet of eitz or not. Or maybe even Rabbi would agree with regards to a knife, since the knife is not a klei sharet. Therefore, you could use wood even for the shechita according to Rabbi. So that turns out to be a machloka between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Ephraim, which, again, there in the Gemara and Tzvachim, Tosfot spends a lot of time on the different sides of the opinions. And one of the rayot that is brought in favor of Rashi is our Gemara here, which seems to indicate that the shechting of the animal is mekadesh the animal, and therefore it must be that it's using a klei sharet. And as the Tosfot Shat says over here, mashmi hocha, the sakin avi kadosh, that the sakin itself was kadosh. Bikasha, mi'aldu b'kera kama de chulin. That's a question from the beginning of Chulin, which says that a kromit shel kaneh, you can use to shecht an animal, but a kromit shel kaneh cannot be made kadosh, it cannot be a klei sharet. So how do we reconcile between those? V'yesh lomar, de lo kasha mide. It's not really a question. Da'au achik Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. That Gemara there is according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, who says that you can use wooden utensils for a klei sharet. The machshir klei sharet, shasan shel eitz. That he says that if it's made out of wood, it's okay. Aval de olam b'inan shasakin avi kadosh. But you do need that the sakina is kadosh, like our Gemara suggests over here. And therefore, the Tosfot Shas concludes, El Shmamina, Dolam Sakin Bayi Klei Sharet, Kedeperish Rashi, Velo Kedeperish Rabbeinu Ephraim. And then he goes on to explain that the Mishnah in the beginning of Ezel Mekoman, and this is why it's found there, says that you have to be Mekabel the Dam, a Klei Sharet, Bitzafon. That you have to Mekabel the Dam and a Klei Sharet in the north. But it never says that you have to do the Shchita with a Klei Sharet. And based on that, he's Medayek, that you don't need a Klei Sharet for the shechita of the Behemah, the Rabbeinu Ephraim. Nevertheless, the Tosfot Shas says that's not a great proof. Miu eino ra'aya, that's not a proof from what we say every morning in the Ezel Mekoman. Da lo tani shechitatan b'kli sharet b'tzafon. So how come it doesn't say you have to shecht them with a kli sharet in tzafon? The tani v'kibel daman b'kli sharet mishum de kavalat tzvich she'a kli b'tzafon. Because by kavalat adam, the actual kli itself must be in the north to do the kavalat adam. By the case of the knife, it does not have to be in the tzafon. You might need a klei sharet, but the knife itself does not need to be in the tzafon. And therefore, if the knife reaches over to the behemah in the northern side, the kli itself or the knife itself does not need to be on that side. And therefore, you could differentiate between why the Mishnah mentions the kli, Kabbalah, and not the knife. And so therefore, he rejects the position of the Rabbeinu Ephraim that you do not need a klei sharet for shechitata behemah, and agrees with Rashi, who seems to indicate that you do need a klei sharet. Again, there's an extensive Tosfot in the beginning of Zvachim by Ezel Mekoman that discusses this issue as to whether you really do need a klei sharet or not for the knife of Shechita. Again, our Gemara favors or seems to indicate that you would need a klei sharet because it says here it's mikadesh, the blood. Despite the fact you still need a klei sharet to be mikabel, the dam. Milaket levonata v'notna gabav. And he collects up the frankincense and puts it with the komets. Tichtiv v'et kol levona shalamincha. He takes all of the vona that's on the mincha, and that's going to end up on the mizbeach with the komets. Umaleu maktiro b'klei sharet. Then he takes it and he puts it on the mizbeach in a klei sharet. Klei sharet maktirle? He's going to put on the mizbeach inside the klei sharet. That doesn't make any sense. Or more importantly, there's still procedures that need to be done here. You still have to put the salt on it. You have to do other things with it. Why is he putting it on the mizbeach now? Ela ema maleu b'klei sharet the haktiro. It's not actually putting it on the fire now. He's just taking it up to the Mizbeach in the Klei Sharet. And that's the Holachata Komets, which is equivalent to the Holachata Dam. Umocho, then he salts it. Noto agave ishim, and then he puts it onto the pyres of the Mizbeach, dichtiv. V'cho kurban minchatcha b'melach timlach, that any mincha that you bring has to be salted. Kareva Komets shireh nechalim. After the Komets is put on Mizbeach, then the residual is eaten by the Kohanim. Minolon, how do you know that? Dichtiv. Iktira koenet azkarata, because it says the koen will put the azkara, this maskeret that goes to Hashem. Then afterwards it's ksteva noteret min haminchal aron uvanav. So then the remainder goes to aron uvanav. So that's giving you the order. Kareva komets. Once the komets is on the mizbeach, then the remainder goes to aron uvanav. Now kareva komets, what is considered to be the hakrava or the haktara of the komets? The marketitle, it's machloket. As to what is considered to be haktarat komet, ditmar komets me matai tira shirayim b'achilav. At one point, does the haktarat komets allow the kohenim to eat it? V'chanina amar mishetishlot bo'or. As soon as it catches fire, as soon as the fire is caught onto it, that is sufficient already to be deemed as if the komets is huktar on the mizbeach. The kohenim can eat. Rabbi Yochanan amar mishetitzit or berubo. It has to be the majority already has caught fire, and that's considered to be haktara, but at the point of which the kohenim can start to eat. So their machloket is, when is it considered to be haktara at the komets? But they both agreed that you need that prior to the Shiareh being Nechalim by the Kohanim. V'shayim Kohanim liten l'tocho yayin v'shemen udvash, my taima, amakro l'moshcha l'gdula. So this is brought by the Gemara in numerous places that says when the Kohanim eat, by the Matnot Kohanim, it says, Kativ l'chanetatim l'machshcha. I'm giving it to you for Mashuach means to anoint. Means that's something that you will eat like a king or like a prince. Just like the kings eat it, you eat it the way that you want and as you please. And therefore you can put any of these condiments or other items to be mixed with it in order to eat it. The only thing that they may not do is make the shiraim into chametz because there is no chametz allowed in the Mikdash. Now the Gemara parses the pasuk so it makes it look like it says here, you may not bake the chametz of their chelek as chametz. But the way the pasuk really reads is, lo te'afeh chametz, you're not allowed to make the minchan to chametz, chelkam natati ota mishai, that their portion comes from the fire, kodesh kodeshim hi kechatat v'asham. The Gemara here parses the pasuk to read, lo te'afeh chametz chelkam, and Rishim ben Lakish, afilu chelkam lo te'afeh chametz, that lo te'afeh chametz is not only modifying the chometz itself or the mincha itself, but it's also modifying chelkam or the noteret that the Aron and Nadab are going to eat, that should not be chametz. And again, it's not far-fetched explanation because the previous pasuk is speaking about the residual that the Kohanim are going to eat that has to be eaten as matzot and should not be made into chametz. And it means that not only the entire mincha should not be made into chametz, but even the part that they will eat after the chametz ends on the mizbeach also should not be made into chametz. Okay, we're going to stop here 16 lines down on the top of Tet Vav Amud Aleph by the two dots.